Everyone, welcome. Good morning. My kids are up there. So distracting every time. My name's Roy. This is my family, the Kai, Iris, and Eden. I get to talk with you this morning, which is great. A little bit about purpose, which you heard the video talk about, and freedom, and in our Exodus series here. But good-looking kids, I would say. Good-looking kids. Every summer, we make a punch list of things we're going to do as a family, right? You guys do this? Ever done this before? You remember in like high school when there was a week left of school and you were like, freedom is so close, right? Look at all the things I'm going to do this summer. This is going to be so great. And you're like, you develop this list. Of course, back then, and maybe even when you're a young adult, you write down things like, I'm going to Disney World. And I'm like scuba diving and sky jumping. It's going to be the best summer ever. Right? And then you do like one of them or none of them. Well, now that I have a young family, our punch list is pretty simple. It's like, literally, this is one of the ones this year. Eat a hot dog. Got that one. It was good. We did it really fast. Or like eat s'mores. A little more complicated, but the summer list became pretty simple because we have these young kids. And they just think of like, anything. And I was like, guys, no, we have to think of things that are like more fun for summer. And my daughter's like, we can drive through Jell-O. No, we can't drive through Jell-O, Iris. Let's bring it down a little bit. So like, you know, you have young kids. This is like part of it. But it was good. Eventually, I added what I wanted to put on the list, which was camping. Now, I take the kids camping every year. And last year, it was just me and two kids. And afterwards, I came home exhausted, and I said, never again, alone with the kids. You're on the hook next year, Alyssa. And so this year, when I wrote it down, I could feel Alyssa's anxiety raise as she was on the hook now. And so we finally went camping last week, which was great. And we have, like, a tent that was given to us. That's not what we look like going camping, by the way. Yeah. There was just dirt everywhere. Anyway, there was someone gave us a tent. It was a four-person tent. And so we have a family of five. And I was like, no, it's fine. We have small children. They'll fit. It'll be great. And so I was a little nervous about the camping. And I wasn't nervous about the bugs or the fire or the s'mores or the fishing or anything else that we did. I was nervous about the sleeping, right? I was nervous about the sleeping. Now, I had issues with one kid sleeping. And I want you to guess who it is. Is it Kai, who's five? And potty trained? And is it Iris, who's four and potty trained? Or is it Eden, who is two, who can't speak in complete sentences, who's never slept out of her bed and is not potty trained? Which one do you think? Yeah, the third one, right? You would think it's her. No, not at all. Like we got in the tents, we're all there, and Eden is just like, I couldn't find her. She just fell asleep in the corner of the tent. I was like, where is she? She was just gone. At 9:30, I was like, that's great. We got one kid down, two left. Now, the older two, they were very preoccupied by the noise of the woods, the crickets. So they're like, what is that sound? They, like, couldn't fall asleep to the crickets. But they're totally fine with sirens and airplanes and all the drama on Washington Street. They're cool with all of that. But the crickets, they're like, what's that noise? So finally, after we dealt with the cricket issue and all the noises in the woods, we said, okay, guys, go to sleep. Lay down. And so at 9:30, they were both laying down, and Kai, my oldest, fell asleep. Now, the middle child, okay? If you're a middle child, raise your hand. If you're like, I'm a middle child, you guys rock. And I'm sorry for you at the same time, right? Yeah, it's good. So Iris is the middle child, and she has, like, more personality like mine. She wants to be involved with things. She wants to not miss out on anything. And so in the middle of the night, you know, at 9:30, she cannot sleep. She's like, it's too hot, it's too loud, it's too everything. And every 5 minutes, I would put her down and go to sleep. I would, like, almost fall asleep. And as I was, like, falling asleep, she'd wake up and I'd hear, ugh, you know, like, she's just so frustrated. She can't verbalize her frustration anymore. And we've been having this problem with her lately. She's been having trouble sleeping at night because she's excited. But she's like, I just can't sleep. And I was like, honey, you just have to go to sleep. Just close your eyes. It'll be fine. Just go to sleep. She's like, but how? How do I sleep? And I'm always like, I don't know. But you can do it. Like, you just close your eyes. It's okay. And so, like, this became the thing. And in the tent, she was doing the same thing. So every, like, 5 minutes, she, like, was so frustrated with sleeping. I mean, eventually, at, like, 2 a.m., I was ready to leave the tent and go in the hammock or drive home with all the family, but she fell asleep eventually, which was good. But I wonder how many times we get frustrated with ourselves, right? How many times do you think, like, we get frustrated with who we are or what we're doing or why we can't do something that we really want to do? You know, I think a lot of times it comes down to our culture. We have a culture that consumes a lot of things about other people. For the first time in history, we have access to everyone all the time. And so I think it actually messes with us a little bit. You know, our culture is how we do the way we do the things we do, right? It's the way we do the things we do. It's how we live. In America, we live a certain way. In the Boston area, we live a certain way. Like, there's not as many roast beef places as other places in the United States. There's not. It's like, it's a Boston thing. I hope you know that. It's a Boston thing. Roast beef places. It's just how we do what we do. And so I think our culture as Americans as the world kind of grows, we have an issue with a highlight reel. We have a highlight reel issue. When the thing is that we consistently see our friends winning, which is great. Like, you have a friend, they do something awesome, like maybe once a month, you'll see, like, they had a kid, or they got a raise at work, or there's something's happening, and you see it online, and you're like, that's so good, I'm so happy for them, and you feel connected, and you feel like they're doing a great job. But then you multiply that by, like, 500 people, or 1,000 people, and every day you see people winning, and you look at yourself, and you think, I'm not doing anything, then we have a problem. Because we just think that we are losers because we're comparing our normal life to everyone else's highlight reel. And I think this will be a totem to our generation. People look back and say, this is the time where people were so, like, could see everything that they freaked out. And so one of the things that does to all of us is that it creates in us a lack of purpose or a lack of, like, meaningfulness in our life. Because we just start to jump to conclusions, unhealthy conclusions in our life. I think that when we talk about the Bible and we talk about God, I think one of the biggest things that we can talk about is the purpose that he has for you and me. He has plans for your life. God has plans for your life. Not one plan, but many, many plans. It's important to have many plans because we keep messing up the plans, right? How many of you know, like, I have messed up God's plans, right? He has another plan. It's okay. There are plans. He has plans for you. And that's a good thing, but we have to, like, learn how to live on mission, live with a purposeful life, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to continue our Exodus series. Pastor Kurt started a few weeks ago. It's on the book of Exodus. We're going through verse by verse, learning and diving deep into what God would have to say through this story. Now, listen. It's not just a story, okay? It's not just a story. It's, like, real. This stuff happened. These people walked on earth. It's not Harry Potter, right? It's real stuff. It's real, okay? So I don't know how to say that the right way. It's like a historical document, all right? So when we read this story, it's God's story personifying his heart, and we're also reading about what actually happened, so we can glean a lot of information from it. Last week we talked about the Hebrews, how the Hebrews are in slavery. They're in slavery to Egypt. You know Egypt, the pyramids. They're in slavery, and for 300 years, they've been in slavery, and that's where we kind of pick up the story here. And this is the story of Moses. In verse 122, it says this: Then Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, gave this order to all his people, throw every newborn Hebrew boy into the Nile River, but you may let the girls live. So we talked last week about the fact that he tried to make this happen secretly. He told the Egyptian midwives secretly. He said, hey, listen, if a Hebrew boy is born and you're there, kill the boy right there. But it didn't work out, okay? And so now he's escalating his evilness to the next level. And that's a public declaration. He's saying, listen, to everyone, if there's a Hebrew boy born, throw him into the Nile River. Now, the Nile River is like one of the biggest rivers in the world, and Egypt draws its life from it. In fact, they worship it to a degree. And so the Nile River is this huge river with all these little rivers coming out of it. And so everyone lives by the Nile River here, and they're going to just throw the baby in the Nile River. It's very sad, very evil. But interestingly enough, Pharaoh is making a leadership decision, a leadership declaration based off of fear. He's afraid. So he's making a decision based off of his fear. Did you know that you make decisions out of fear all the time? And I do as well. We may either make decisions out of fear or out of vision, fear or dreams. We learned this principle last year at Lead Retreat. It was this big talk about it, and I've been applying it to my life this whole year thinking about it. How do I make decisions out of fear? And in what way is that real? See, Lead Retreat is huge. And if you haven't came and you serve here, you got to come. It's coming up in a couple weeks, and you got to be a part of it because, like, the information gleaned from that and the community that was formed is critical to your life. So if you serve here, seriously, figure out a way to get there. So Pharaoh, that's the context of the story. That's what's going on. So now in chapter 2, it's good, the story picks up about Moses. It says this in verse 1. About this time, a man and woman from the tribe of Levi got married. The woman became pregnant and gave birth to a son. She saw that he was a special baby, meaning like beautiful or not messed up or like important. Not just important. All babies are important, right? But this was like more than that. And kept him hidden for 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she got a basket made of papyrus reeds and waterproofed it with tar and pitch. She put the baby in the basket and laid it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile River. The baby's sister then stood at a distance watching to see what would happen to him. So here's the story about Moses' mom. Moses' mom and his sister. Moses' mom is a woman of faith. She's a woman of faith because she has been oppressed, and her culture, her people have been oppressed for generations. For 300 years they've been oppressed at this point, and they're still not done. There's still like 80 more years of oppression that's going to happen. And when that happens to you, when you're in slavery for a long time, or when a people group is oppressed, one of the first things that happens is that you stop believing or dreaming or having a vision for more. You're just oppressed. It's hard to believe in more. You've been shut down to anything else. And so could you imagine 300 years of this? I was in the Czech Republic a couple years ago visiting some church planters named David and Jana. David and Jana wanted to plant a church in the Czech Republic. Well, there's not a lot of like Christian churches there anymore. And so they want to make a difference in that area. But their like ferocity, their want to make a big difference is unusual in that country. So, because for less than 50 years, they had rulers. They had the Germans, the Nazis, and the Soviets were occupying the Czechoslovakia or the Czech Republic. And so just based off of 40 years or whatever, their culture had changed so that their individual voices feel lost. Could you imagine what it would be like to have oppression for hundreds of years? What would happen to a culture? What happened to your faith? What happened to believing for more? How could you decide to have faith in this impossible situation? Moses' mom has an impossible situation. She's supposed to kill her baby boy. That's what she's supposed to do. So obviously she doesn't. But now the baby boy is 3 months old, and the boy's cry is loud enough that other people can hear, and she can't keep the boy hidden any longer. So what does she do? I mean, could you put yourself in those shoes? I can't believe it. I wouldn't know. I think I would quit. Seriously. Because you have, like, you're raising and falling in love with this baby, but you know that there's like an end date very soon. Like, how do you handle that and have the faith in the context of that to carry through? I think maybe one of her options, I think she could quit. She could be like, here, give it to like a neighbor or a sister and say, can you take care of my baby? You take care of it. I need to stop. Because it's so overwhelming, right? But she also didn't go the other way and quit by just letting go and letting God or something like that. where she's just like, oh, God will take care of it. It's fine. You know what she did? She made this waterproof basket. Now, this basket's important to remember because this is the most technologically advanced thing she could make. Like, the boats in the Nile River were made this way. So it's like this waterproofed basket that she made, and she does everything she can do to have her kids survive. Everything she can do. She doesn't just put him in a basket. She doesn't just, like, lay him beside the reeds. She doesn't just give him away. She does everything she can do for the hope that this boy could have a life or have a purpose. You see, she is doing something with faith. You know, I often wonder for us how often we do everything we can do when faced with an impossible scenario. Have you ever thought of what it must be like, or have you ever gone through a sickness or a trial? How do you handle that? I think a lot of people, let's just take a sickness for example. Like, going to the doctors and fighting physically for your sickness is an important part of being healed. Some Christians today say, no, they won't even say they're sick. They're like, no, I'm not sick. God's going to heal me. Well, listen, having faith that God's going to heal you is important, but you need to do everything you can to be healed in every way. So going to the doctors, following the prescribed path, going through it all is part of your faith. And it's also important not to quit in that circumstance and be like, this is too hard, I'm just going to be done here, right? The hardest thing is fighting for it. And Moses' mom is like a power mom. Like, she makes this happen. It's incredible. We know that Moses' mom is a big deal because Moses' sister's name is Miriam and his brother's name is Aaron. And these three lead the Hebrew people out of Egypt. Like, this power team. How do you create, like, three people of such importance? Is it God's blessing? Sure. But it's also a mom who knows what she's doing. That's a big deal. So Moses' mom is full of faith. Let's continue reading. It says this. The baby sister is watching, Miriam. She's watching to see what happens to her baby brother. Okay. Soon Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe in the river, and her attendants walked along the riverbank. When the princess saw the basket among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it for her. When the princess opened it, she saw the baby. The little boy was crying, and she felt sorry for him. This must be one of the Hebrew children, she said. So Pharaoh's daughter is one princess of many. Pharaoh had concubines and many wives, so there's dozens of daughters. And she is one princess. It's possible that Moses' mom knew where the princess bathed, like, so she placed Moses in a certain spot. But either way, the princess is faced with she has an issue in her hands now. This baby boy is a problem because she is supposed to kill the baby boy. The baby boy is supposed to be drowning in the river, right? That's the decree placed by Pharaoh to throw every Hebrew baby boy into the river. Now, she has to either follow that law or do something else. And the princess is doing something very important here. I want you to catch. She is available to be part of a miracle. She is available to live a life with purpose. I worked at Panera Bread for a little bit in college. Panera Bread. Panera Bread's the best because there's bread. And I love bread, right? You got sandwiches, you got whatever. Panera Bread. Back then, it was a lot cheaper. I don't know why it keeps getting more expensive. Okay, focus. Panera Bread. So when I worked at Panera Bread, it was like, in the beginning, I was so happy. I was making sandwiches. I was making, like, salads, giving them to people, making their day. It was great. Everything was awesome. That lasted, like, 2 days, right? After that, you're like, this is the worst. You're, like, making, all of a sudden, this, like, gift that you're giving someone turns into this thing that you're just doing, right? It's almost like a project. I made this project, and then I submitted the project. There's like a no emotional value whatsoever. You're just working, and everything becomes part of the system that you're making happen. Now, this is normal. It's a part of jobs. But if we're not available for God to use us in the context of that, then we just ignore everything else. It's like we live in tunnel vision. And this happens to our life, not just at work, but at home and all the different areas. We end up just kind of doing what we always do, and we lose track of the opportunities that God sends our way. So I remember at Panera, there were opportunities to talk with people or to, like, connect with someone or even coworkers, but sooner or later you just kind of just do what you're supposed to do and you cut off the availability that you have for God to use you. Has this ever happened to you? The Pharaoh's daughter was most likely taking a ritual bath or a religious thing. She was doing what she was supposed to do. So for her to like see the basket and to go out of her way or her normal daily life to be available for God to use her is a big deal. If you and I want to live a life with purpose, we have to be able to be available for God to use us. So let's keep reading. The little boy was crying, and she felt sorry for him. This must be one of the Hebrew children, she said. Then the baby sister, Miriam, approached the princess. Should I go and find one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? Okay, Miriam's awesome. She's like clutch in this scenario. She's perfect timing. She's waiting, right? She's like, it's the best. Okay, the baby sister approached the princess. Should I go and find one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? She asked. Yes, do, the princess replied. So it is not acceptable for an Egyptian to nurse a Hebrew child. And it also wasn't normal for royalty to nurse a kid. She would pay someone to do it. And so it says, so the girl went and called the baby's mother. Take this baby and nurse him for me, the princess told the baby's mother. I will pay you for your help. So the woman took the baby home and nursed him. I mean, 7 verses later, Moses' mom was in a position where there was an impossible scenario in front of her that there was no way out. And now she gets her baby back, can raise her child, and get paid to do it. That's a pretty big deal, right? How many of you moms wish you were getting paid to raise your kids, right? Yeah. It's okay. Does the royalty just pay you to nurse your kids? Like, it's the best. And that you moms, you deserve to be paid. I wish you could figure that out. Moms are the most important people in the world. Generations rise and fall on mothers. So could you imagine? This is such a good thing. So if you're a mom in the room, like, you are very valued, even though culture may not tell you that anymore. You're a big deal. If I was royal, never mind. We'll keep going. You guys, yeah, that's okay. So the princess took her mother. I will pay for your help. So the woman took the baby home and nursed him. This is when the story gets good, because God is doing something miraculous here. I think that to create a tool to be used by God, to create a specialized tool for a special purpose, like, you have to set things up right. And Moses is being set up for a special thing, because Moses now spends his early childhood development with his real parents. And he gets taught the core values of the Hebrew people. And then when he's like 4 or 5, he gets sent to live with the princess. And it says in verse 10, later when the boy was older, his mother brought him back to Pharaoh's daughter, who adopted him as her own son. The princess named him Moses, for she explained, I lifted him out of the water. So Moses is being created to be this perfect tool for God. And if he didn't grow up in the Hebrew family and then grow up in the palace, he wouldn't have what he needs to lead the Hebrew people out of Egypt later. Because as a prince of Egypt, he would be trained in all of the traditional ways of leading and give him access in the future to lead the people out of Egypt. So God is creating this perfect tool for a perfect scenario to be able to alleviate oppression and slavery in his own people. So this is all like part of one of the plans for Moses. If the band would come on up. If you continue reading Exodus, which you can, we're going to be doing the series for a little bit, but you can continue reading it and you'll see how Moses messes his plans up. You'll see how Moses is, he sees God's call in his life and can't figure it out. He wrestles with his call. You'll see how Moses fails to live on purpose and disobeys God. You'll see all these different things. But in the middle of it all, you'll also see God being faithful to the plans and the purposes he has for someone, which is pretty cool. And I want to tell you this because this is the first time we're talking about Moses. And Moses is a big deal in our Christian faith. It's not because he's a story of a baby in a basket, but because Moses ends up paving the way for Jesus. He is the story of God. His story is a story of God's heart. And so when you read it, you get to glean information about God. And so I want you to see this. The princess named him Moses. Most likely she did not name him the literal word Moses. She named him an Egyptian word that sounded like Moses. And then the Hebrews named him Moses. It would have been this name kind of like Ramses, right? Ramses, the second half of that word, Ramses, right? That like God, it's like an Egyptian name. But the Hebrews would have heard Moses, which is a similar word. And Moses means I lifted him out of the water. God always had a plan to use Moses, despite the fact that Moses is going to mess it up and all these different things. And you see it right here. I lifted him out of the water, is what his name means. And what Moses ends up doing is he ends up literally bringing the Hebrew people out of Egypt, out of slavery. He lifts them out. He lifts them out of slavery into like the Red Sea, out of the water. This is like his calling in a word. He lifts them out. And what's important to remember here, it is not just Moses' calling, but also Jesus's as well. Because the sin that so easily entangles us, that drives us to slavery, to oppression, to the spot where we can't think, breathe, or dream of something more, where you're stuck, in order to get out, there's a specialty tool that's been designed for you that lived the life as a human, but also as our God, our creator God, that fixes the foundations of the earth and it changes how God relates with you. This God, this person, Jesus, is the tool that will set you free. Moses is the story of God's heart. But we all are captive to sin. We all get stuck. Whether it's addiction or pain or relationships, whether it's our own self, there are reasons and ways we get stuck. But God is a specialty tool designed for you and for me. If everyone in the room would stand up with me, we're going to close here. I want to give you an opportunity to respond to this message today. I don't know where you're at, what life's been like for you the past season, but I will tell you that you can move forward today, or at least make a commitment to move forward. Here at our church, there are several ways to move forward. One of them is saying to God, hey God, I want to keep going. I want to keep fighting. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep fighting. Sometimes you make a commitment here at the front at the end of worship or at the end of a sermon. Sometimes it's small groups and opening up on a Wednesday night or serving in a ministry. There are lots of different ways to grow here, and you got to figure that out. But I want to talk to some of you in specific about your relationship with Christ, and perhaps for you, you feel like you're stuck in a way that like you've given your life to Christ, but you can't seem to figure out how. Like, how do I sleep? How do I do this? Like, how? And I want to tell you right now that if Iris had a magic button on my daughter's leg that she could just press and fall asleep, it would be very easy. But like, oh, you press the button. But with our relationship with God, God is a person. And when you talk with him, you grow with him, it's individualistic, you and your relationship with God. And so it's not an easy answer, how? But I will tell you this, if you stick with it, if you keep coming, if you keep fighting, then sooner or later, you're going to fall asleep. Sooner or later, it's going to be okay. You'll get through it. You might feel super frustrated. You're like, Can't sleep. Right? It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Keep fighting. So we're going to end today. I want to give you an opportunity to respond. For some of you today, you need to have that fighting faith in your life to get up another day, to dream again. That might be you in this room. For some of you in the room, you need to have availability for God to use you. You know God has a plan and a purpose for your life, but for some reason, you just keep just trucking along and ignoring all everything else. Maybe you need to have some availability in your life. And then maybe for some of us, you just feel so stuck that you need someone to lift you out, someone to get you out, someone to keep, someone to say it's going to be okay and you can keep moving forward. So during this time, I want to invite you up to the front. You can come up and pray up here, and we're going to sing a song together. But I'm going to pray, and after I pray, I want to invite you to respond to this message. Jesus, thank you so much today for your word, for your story, for the story you're writing in our life. God, I pray that peace that surpasses all understanding would be upon our hearts. That you would provide for us in the midst of feeling trapped or stuck. God, you would give us a great purpose and understand that you have plans for us. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.